talk a little football as we are joined by a former member of the Univea Bears and, of course, the Edmonton Eskimos. Tom Richards joins me in studio. Tommy, how you doing?
I'm well, sir. Things sound like they're going pretty well for you, other than trying to figure out the music.
It's a big debate over the Foo Fighters, right? Although I will say right now, Charles Manson's dating life is more active than Mark Mageau's. That's, you know, he's 80 years of age and his girlfriend's 26.
I could tell just by meeting him a couple of minutes ago. So.
Come on, Mageau, step up your game.
Do you know what I'm doing tonight that Charles Manson's not? Literally anything I want to do. The joy of being a single man.
Yeah. At least you got that goal.
But you're not having any conjugal visits, are you?
That's very
true. I want to talk about the rivalry. Now, when you played the Eskimo Stampeder rivalry, that wasn't the big one, really. You guys and Winnipeg had a much more heated rival.
We definitely had more trouble with Winnipeg. We'd win as often as we would lose, but Calgary, at the time, it was before they got Flutie, it just wasn't much of a rivalry.
Now, when you're spanking the hell out of them, it's still fun, but it's not as intense, is it?
Well, I can't say that we got to the point where we'd feel sorry for them. never got to be that quite like that. But it was just one of those one of the teams during a certain era, I guess, where we were definitely the stronger club.
Now, we had you on earlier, you and Jason Buell and a few other guys really try to resurrect the University of Alberta Golden Bears football alumni. And, Chris Morris, their team was winning. They went right down basically to the final drive of the season and unfortunately came up short to the playoffs. But with them coming back around, there seemed to be a lot more excitement around the Bears football alumni program. And I think I get the sense with the Eskimos coming back that it's kind of the same thing. And you're an alumnus of both.
Yeah, really earlier in the year, a group of us got together and decided that something's got to change for the university football program. And it basically comes down to raising more money. The ball club, the university, I guess, they fund their team as much as U of C funds their team and U of S funds their team and so on and so forth. But it's the fact that the alumni and the program in Calgary and in Saskatchewan, they just do more to raise money. And the difference is the number of scholarships they could give out, the number of full-time coaches that they'd have on staff, and even having an exhibition game. So my attitude in the past, and I think it was shared by many of the alumni, was that, well, the university should be bucking up. They've got to fund the program if they want to compete. It's just not happening. I mean, with their budgets getting cut, you know, funding a football team or any of the athletic teams really wasn't going to be high on their list. So the light bulb finally went on, as I say, for me and a few others. And really, we just started asking. We got out in the community and started asking for dollars. And it wasn't, obviously, we weren't selling the fact that they were a winning football program. They hadn't won a game in 3 years, so they were 0-24. But we were reminding people and corporations that we're raising fine young men. And Chris Morris has put together an amazing football program, but it's not just football, including things like a mandatory study hall for kids. So we make kids go to a mandatory study hall, and of course we've got to staff it with tutors that are going to help them with their English and sciences.
And so the alumni helps fund that?
The alumni helps fund it, but who really stepped up this year was EPCOR. EPCOR stepped up to make sure that it was established, that it had the foundation of something that we could build on. And then a number of other corporations started getting involved, and we've been able to build some great momentum. We've been able to, as a little group, basically try to get the word out. We try to raise awareness, including raising money. We're trying to make sure that everybody in the community and certainly the alumni are aware that if you want to change this program and see it go from something that they're not going to be winning to something that's a winning program and that students are coming to U of A, coming out with a great outcome. Obviously, the University of Alberta is one of the best in the country. They will provide kids with a great opportunity to do something later in our community. But up until this year, a lot of those great kids in Edmonton were going elsewhere because the opportunity was better elsewhere. Better football program, more scholarship dollars awarded, and we were losing a lot of our locally produced great athletes. So I think Chris has done an amazing job of not just securing our local talent, but also bringing kids in from other places.
Tom Richards joins us now. When you look at the Bears alumni program, and then you've got the Eskimos alumni, I know you've got the alumni room and everything, it's a lot different. The Eskimo alumni doesn't have to go out and, you know, ask for money or anything. Can you compare or contrast the differences between, you know, Golden Bears alumni to Eskimo alumni?
Well, I guess that one of the biggest differences is the Eskimo alumni do a great job in the community helping other charities raise some money. So just by showing up to different events and speaking at different events, whether it's participating in a golf tournament or whatever function, that the Eskimo alumni can help make that event a little bit better and share in a few stories about the old days. The Golden Bear alumni really are, it's about fellowship, sharing some of the old stories, and about helping the current team. So really quite a different group.
I got a sense from a few people that this year, though, there was a lot more alumni guys kind of maybe popping their heads out from the snow, if we say. The team, they're starting to see the progress, and, you know, all of a sudden you see some momentum, and everyone's like, hey, you know what? Yeah, I played there 10 years ago or 6 years ago or 4 years ago or 20 years ago. Now I want to be involved. Did you notice a kind of a big surge this year with alumni wanting to get back involved?
Absolutely. It was one of the greatest outcomes that we had with – we had our – AGM in I think it was April, and we had six people would show up in previous years, and this year we had just about 100 all listening to the story.
Oh,
so
wow.
We got a chance to better educate the alumni, and then they got excited about it. And at the end of that meeting, I was approached by a handful of guys saying, well, how do we get more involved? And then we had the golf tournament, and we raised a couple of years ago, I guess we were raising about 20,000. We raised over 50,000 this year. Again, I had a handful of guys come up to me after. How do we get more involved? Some of the positive things, the momentum, obviously, the team won a few games this mm-hmm. year. But also, Chris has done a great job in recruiting. Chris Morris has done a great job in recruiting, and we're getting those top athletes signed to come to the University of Alberta. He's having great success with the study hall program, and all the kids are doing well. You know, we're not losing a kid because of academic reasons at all, because they've got the support.
And that wasn't always the case.
Not always the case. But really, if you take any sampling of 100 people, you're going to have a couple that are falling by the wayside. Well, Chris's goal is 100% that every kid is that's on with his football program is going to be getting everything that he needs to be successful in the classroom.
You go to the games. So what was the biggest difference you saw on the field that led to them to having victories, and how most people assume next year they should be a playoff team?
Well, it's hard to watch a team that hasn't learned how to win, because there were athletes on the field that had never won. They were in their fourth season. And you were just kind of waiting for that moment to get over that, whatever, that intangible thing that's really hard to describe, but you got to learn how to win. You know, they were close early on in the season, losing in overtime. So we thought that was going to be the learn to win, but they finally did, and then they won again, and they were very close in some others. It's you could see that maturity of the team and coaches. Frankly, I mean, some of the coaches hadn't won a game, so it was great to see that moment happen and to see the kids start to believe in what they're doing and all the hard work that they've been doing in the off season. It was just starting to pay off. It was really great to see some of these fine young kids learn how to win.
If there's any alumni listening right now for the Golden Bears who want to get involved, how do they do so? What do they do?
Best thing is to contact Coach Morris, and you can reach him at the university website, and then we can direct you on how best you can be of service. I know one of the things that we just started putting the initial stages in planning is the first annual fundraising dinner. We'll hold that April 9th. Next year. So we're just putting the final plans in place where we can go out and start marketing and start talking to people about it and create a foundation for future fundraising events. And hopefully this dinner can be a cornerstone event in the future, because that's one of the successful teams out there is the University of Calgary, and that their event raises over $300,000 a year at that single dinner. It's very similar to the Eskimo annual dinner that's held.
That big, wow.
But they raise more money.
Really?
Yeah, it's really quite something.
That's That's not so good. Well, you know what? If you get the right people involved and have enough people there and you get the guys with the deep pockets, then usually you can raise some money. We'll take a quick break. I want to come back. I'm going to ask you to stick through one more because I want to talk playoff football, the Eskimos and the Stampeders. Mike Riley, and you know how much of an impact that can make just by the presence of certain guys on the field, playing on the wide side as a receiver compared to the short side. You know, how can Fred Stamps be more involved in this offense? Tom, you were a receiver for a long time. We'll get your thoughts on that. And more when you return on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. You're listening to The Gregor Show presented by Loop City featuring Mobile One, the official motor oil of NASCAR. Nice. Tom Richards, former Eskimo and U of A Golden Bear alumni, joins me. I want to talk about the playoffs. Now, you and I were having a very unique conversation because I asked about Fred Stamps and people are wondering, like, how to get Fred Stamps more involved. I know he's moved to the far side of the field, and that does make a big difference when you're on the far hash marks compared to the short side field. Most of the quarterbacks will throw there. You played, you know, you lined up on both sides, Tom. When you're lined up on the far side as a receiver, what do you think you need to do to ensure that you can find a way to get more involved in the offense?
Always go after the ball. I mean, anytime it's in your neighborhood, you know, you got to show that you've still got some fight in you and to get after it. You know, one of the things as a veteran, when you just want to get involved early. Like, give me the ball early. Get my hands on it. Let me get tackled, like, whatever it is. But you want that contact. You want to get that kind of bit of an adrenaline a little bit out of your system, you know, because you're ready and you're fired up. And being the far side versus near side, you tend to be – can be a little isolated when you're on the short side and you're all alone over there. But on the wide side, there's a lot of room out there too. So, I mean, there's pluses to both sides of it.
Yeah, if you're a guy who's a good yak player, sometimes the wide side's better, right? If you feel you can beat a guy or break a tackle, suddenly you can turn it upfield.
Well,
more.
Typically the defender's going to play you off a little bit farther because it's a long throw. I mean, the Canadian football field is a much bigger field than that other no fun league. And it's, if you get the ball over there, you've got a lot of room to make a move. And if somebody misses, man, you can pick up a lot of yak.
I think I saw the math on it. If you run a 10-yard out on the far side, that's a 42-yard throw for the quarterback to make a 10-yard completion.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's just the quarterbacks, they take a chance when they throw that out to the wide side. So they gotta have a good arm.
Now, you had mentioned that you were a guy who was so amped up. You like being on the kickoff team right at the start of the gate because that seemed to calm you down.
Because, again, I could get rid of some of that adrenaline. I could just take off, run down the field. And I wasn't big enough to be a wedge buster or to take on their biggest guys. Though some of my favorite special teams plays were, in fact, having to bust through the wedge and that kind of thing. But I could run down, usually on the outside, and then bust in and get a lick on somebody at the end of it, knowing that I'd kind of turn the momentum of the play inside toward the help, toward the guys that could really tackle rather than me. So, yeah, but it was fun to make the field a little bit smaller for the rest of my teammates.
For a guy who played both offense and on the special teams, I watched the Eskimo special teams, and Dickinson has come in and, like, they're so focused on their lane assignments, but I watch the communications at times where you will see a guy who will switch off because the other guy got and they're literally yelling at one another as they're running down the field, and that's when they change their lanes. Like, this, their special team unit is a lot more disciplined than I've seen in previous years.
Well, if you can get the players to trust in each other and realize that if I got knocked out of my lane, that it's just natural for the guy beside me to take my lane and I'll take his. And if you can get that communication where it's pretty quick and pretty seamless and it happens, then you can really trust one another and you can turn it up a notch. You can go that little bit more out of control because you know you're going to be able to cover each other off. So that's a great thing to get to that level of communication and output.
Now, you were on special team. When you have a guy like Gizmo Williams there, and now the Eskimos, and I'm not saying that Kendall Lawrence is like Gizmo Williams, but he's busted three now. When you have a guy who you think can return it, I think guys naturally will become better blockers because they're like, man, all the hard work, there is a payoff potential more.
And with a special athlete that we had in Gizmo, it didn't take much of a block, and he could take advantage of it. And I certainly returned a few kicks and punts with him, and they would put me in a position where I was really just there to block. Now, the other team kind of knew that too, and then they were kicking us, who are you going to kick to? Yeah. So I got a lot of balls because of that, because I was back there with Henry. But what I did on a number of occasions is I would get the ball and pitch it back to Henry and then turn up field and start blocking somebody. Because even with that little bit of a delay that we had to transfer the ball between one another, he was just that fast and could powerfully go through somebody rather than have to run around.
How was he as a blocker, though, on the rare time? Like, was he a guy who enjoyed blocking?
I hope he's listening. Never made a block.
Really? Because you'd think at his size.
I could have had a 10-year career for crying out loud, but nope, he never made a block.
Man, because he was put together pretty good.
Very powerful.
You'd think that, because a lot of guys said, man, it was hard to tackle him. You'd think as a blocker, if he was dedicated to it, he would have been able to run over a few guys.
You'd think. But no, Henry was so powerful that a lot of smaller guys that are just fast. I mean, guys are strong enough. You just get a club on a guy, just one arm, you can knock him over. Henry would just rip your arm off on the way by, sort of thing, because he was so powerful that he didn't need much of a gap. And if you're just going to get an arm on him, you're not going to tackle him.
Dion Lacy becomes the first Eskimo ever to lead the CFL in special teams tackles. You were on the cover team, not a lot on the punt cover team as much as kickoffs, and then of course you were on the return. What do you see in Lacy? Like, what does it take to be a guy who's Jed Roberts? And I know they didn't keep those. I don't think they counted it when he was in the league, and he was obviously one of the leaders for a long time, and it kind of came in late. But you look at a guy like Dion Lacy on special teams, and how important he is to your team when everybody knows, hey, that's the guy that's going to get downfield all the time.
It's a guy that just has a knack. It's one of those uncoachable skills where you've just got an instinct of, you can read the blocking in front of you and what they're trying to do, and you know where you got to get to. And you've got an ability of shedding blocks and really ignoring the chaos that's going on, knowing exactly what's about to happen. I mean, they talk about that in hockey, where go where the puck is going to be. Well, he's got a knack for knowing where the ball's going to be. And he can spot a lane that's opening up that he's going to fill, because the runner's probably going to be seeing it from the other side, and to be there and to close it down. It's a special kind of athlete that's able to do that, because there's not a lot of structure going on out there. Even though, you know, we talked about guys staying in your lanes and all that, it's never ever executed the way it's drawn up, because a lot of things are going on and guys are just, some a little bit faster and somebody got hit and everything's disrupted. You still have to know at the end of the day where the ball is going and to be there.
In your era of guys you played with, who are the elite guys that get in downfield?
Well, you know, if you go by position, linebackers are just naturally crazy. They, you know, if you just kind of look at it, a lot of football players, okay, maybe they act like they've been hit by a bus. Well, linebackers were hit by a bus often. It seemed like a weekly thing. They were so crazy. But they were just, they love that contact and they love getting down there. Running backs, the same thing. Just the most athletic guys, just seem to have a knack for avoiding that hit and to have a nose for the football and to be there. But Jed, you nailed it. Was just one of those captain guys that
he's kind of got a screw loose for sure. Hopefully
Jed,
his hearing aid's in right now.
Well, maybe I hope not.
Tom Richards joins us. Mike Riley comes into that game, and the Eskimos offense, you know, Matt Nichols had 41 yards passing and, you know, looked a little hesitant to run. And when Riley came in, he handed the ball off, I think, on every play except one in the first three series. You've been on winning teams, and Riley's clearly the offensive leader. I don't think there's any doubt about that. What did you make of that decision, and how much it meant, do you think, to the offense just to have Mike Riley, the guy, no offense to Matt Nichols, is the one calling the plays?
Yeah, you know, that's a difficult thing as well, because if you get too reliant on one guy and you can see the sag, like, oh, man, no, we're not going to be able to do it because we can't do this, we can't do that. Oh, he's back. We can do this, we can do that. And it sounds like a silly sort of thing, but you get comfortable with it with one guy, especially the guy that's calling the signals and starting every play with the ball. You just get that comfort with him that he can make it happen. And again, no disrespect to Matt, but Matt just hasn't had enough time under real live fire. And he needs to get that under his belt, where he's used to having live bullets fired at him at game speed, where he can get a little bit more comfortable back there and not feel that he's got to make decisions when sometimes the best decision is just to eat the ball, just to fall down and call it a play and live for another day.
Now, Grey Cup's coming up in Vancouver in just under 2 weeks' time. Are you a guy? Do you still make annual treks to the Grey Cup?
Yeah, I didn't last year. I usually go out with an uncle and a cousin. We usually meet up wherever it is and have some fun, take in the festivities. We didn't last year because we don't have any relatives in Regina to have a place to stay. But I am going to BC this year, and I hope to see the Eskimos there.
And you might venture into the Spirit of Edmonton room.
Might find my way. Yeah. Do you know where it is?
I've been there a few times. Yeah. It's a fun place. I remember the very first one that I went to. Honestly, I'd never actually been to a Grey Cup until outside of Edmonton, of course. And then I covered the first one I ever covered was in 2001 in Montreal, which is obviously one of the best cities ever if you want to go to a Grey Cup. And I was just amazed at the camaraderie of everybody. Like, everybody's wearing their different jerseys. And, you know, no one's – you can have Hamilton Tiger Cat fans and Argo fans, and they're sharing beers. And it's a very friendly atmosphere. Yeah. And a lot of fun. Like, the Spirit of Edmonton room is like, the best party at Grey Cup every year.
It just always is, and I think always will be. I think Bruce Kelty does an amazing job, and he will continue with his – army of volunteers that have been doing it for a long time. They just know how to get it done and how to host a party. But Grey Cup is a national, it's truly a Canadian national event.
Nah.
And, you know, you might have your Eskimo jersey on and you're going to have some good fun with a Ryder fan and you're going to tease each other. It's just, at the end of the day, we're great Canadians and we love our great Canadian football.
The 2003 Grey Cup in Regina was freezing. But I ran into Trent Brown and Jed Roberts at the Spirit of Edmonton room at around 9 o'clock one night. And I think we partied together literally until 10 o'clock the next day. And that was the first time I ever went to the Spirit of Edmonton breakfast.
I was going to say, you just stayed for the breakfast?
What am I doing here? I needed a break from Grey Cup, but it was outstanding. It was a lot of fun. So anyone who's going to the Grey Cup, and obviously the Eskimos haven't been there since 2005. A long time, no Eskimo fans, hoping that changes. But really, to me, I think whoever wins the West will win the Grey Cup.
Certainly got a good shot at it. I was really surprised how BC didn't, but they forgot to show up.
Yeah.
It was just, holy cow. Crompton did an amazing job. He's getting better every week. He's just getting that much more confident. So I'm excited for him until Grey Cup. And can go back to
if you're handicapping the Eskimo Calgary game, what are the keys for the Eskimos if they're going to get a win?
Like Cornish is an amazing player, an amazing athlete. I don't know how dinged he really is. I mean, for his sake, I hope he's healthy. But if he's got to sit down, that's definitely going to improve the Eskimo chances. We certainly have a great defense that is very well capable of slowing him down. But Cornish is going to get his yards. He is going to get some good gains. That's just the nature of playing against one of the best players in the league right now. So if we can do our best to control him and make them come out throwing, we'll see how Mitchell does again when it's in playoff time, where it tends to be a little more pressure, a little bit different game. As much as you say it's just another game, it's not. There's a little bit more pressure and a little bit more urgency to get something done, and we'll see how he handles that. I think, again, I'm very happy with the offense. I think hopefully Riley's going to be all right with his foot. I think we've got the horses to have a good offensive day. It's going to seem like a bit of a warm day compared to last week. So it's going to be around zero, maybe a couple degrees either way. I don't think there's going to be any excuse for the weather coming up. It's going to be a really great game. It's anybody's game, truly. I mean, Calgary had a very strong year. We finished really well, though. And it's nice to have that kind of momentum going into this time of year, where we're definitely on the uptrend. And Calgary kind of finished flat. So that's a good thing in our favor. So I can see it being a close game, but we're going to come out just on top.